Hi, I'm Sky Guthrie, and you're listening to the Need to Know podcast.
We've got Robert Crane.
In 3, 2, 1.
He's a Microsoft MVP, a Microsoft
certified trainer,
an Office 365
specialist, blogger, podcaster, social media enthusiast, and one-of-a-kind speaker who has a gift for explaining tech to the average person so they can understand it.
Hi, I'm Donna Sarkar, and you're listening to the Need to Know podcast.
There's also myself, Mark Keane. All right, let's move on. I'm the voiceover guy, producer of this podcast, blogger, speaker,
an Azure
architect,
and Microsoft
MVP who specializes in helping people with a journey to Microsoft Azure. You are listening to the
Need to Know podcast.
It's your source for the very latest in Microsoft Cloud news, as well as industry guest deep dive conversations all about Azure and Office 365.
Hi, I'm Lars Clint, and you're listening to the Need to Know podcast.
Welcome to yet another episode of the Need to Know podcast. We're over the 150 threshold, into 151, and into the home straight towards 200. And luckily, for this episode, I'm joined by my co-host, Mark Keane, who has a bit of a story to tell us about why he may not have quite made the most recent recording. Mark?
Well, because I nearly died.
Right. Is that being overly dramatic?
No, it's true. I nearly died.
You did tell me, and I do have to warn you that I was interviewing for your position on the podcast, so it's just you've saved me a whole heap of paperwork coming back and doing it. So it's good to have you back.
I have been a full-time employee for a long time, for the past 3 or 4 years for different companies. But just recently, I've changed to be a contractor because I used to be a contractor. And you know what? Contracting does have its advantages. And also at the same time, someone at upstairs is obviously, I'm not on in their good books. They're not looking out for me because I've also in the last three to four years, I've gotten massively sick. So 2 weekends ago, came down with the flu, and then that brought on. I was diagnosed the other day with what's called pneumonia, and that's a pretty bad bug to have. So I'm actually still got part of it right now, and I'm high on antibiotics and things like that.
So if people want to send you their best wishes, what's the best way for them to send you their best wishes about your getting better?
They don't need to worry about that.
Please,
I know that I got their best wishes with them.
Oh, come on.
Well, if you want to...
The Twitter's the way to go.
We've got the contact details on the... All right. Well, so it's at N2K Podcast.
No, that's the podcast. The podcast is fine. How can I send it directly to you?
All right. At Mark Keane, M-A-R-C. Here we go. Here's a cough coming on. Hang on. Okay, so it's at Mark Keane, M-A-R-C-K-E-A-N.
There you go. All right, so for everybody there who wants to find out, have a chat to Mark and get the spelling of the word pneumonia correct, by all means, send him a tweet. It's glad to have him back, and we would miss his dulcet tones in the background and his input on Azure. Speaking of which, probably it's about time that we hear some Azure news. Mark, have you got something for us?
Well, did you want to hear about other news as well?
Well, let me get to the other news afterwards. The ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls have been waiting in bated breath for Azure news. So let's hit them up with that first.
All right. So there's quite a bit that's happened because we haven't done this for a while. Azure Search releases support for synonyms public preview. So Microsoft have announced public preview of support for synonyms in Azure Search. One of Microsoft's most requested features on user voice. It allows for Azure Search to not only return results which match the query terms that were typed into the search box, but also return results which match synonyms of the query terms. As a search as a service solution, Azure Search is used in a wide variety of applications which span many languages, industries, and scenarios. Since technology and definitions vary from case to case, Azure Search's Synonyms API allow customers to define their own synonym mappings. More information on my blog, which will be in the show notes.
Cool.
Also, too, Microsoft's commercial cloud run rate keeps hitting the news. Their commercial cloud run rate tops $15 billion. Azure revenue soars. The Microsoft cloud commercial run rate has reached $15.2 billion. An annualized measure that includes Office 365 commercial, Azure, Dynamics 365, and other cloud initiatives from the company. This is up from $14 billion Last quarter, which we also talked about in the podcast, the company has promised to get to the number of 20 billion in the year 2020. So that's in cloud revenue, by the way. So I don't think they're going to have any problems whatsoever getting there.
All right, so let me just quickly throw in some Office 365 numbers as well. They indicated that they're over 300 million active users now, and that cool. When I looked at the roadmap, which is roadmap.office.com, I believe, there were over 363 changes or additions in that roadmap alone in the last couple of days. So, man, talk about a product that's on the up and up. Add that to Azure and, poof, man, Microsoft will make 20 billion easy.
Geez, so just when you thought Office 365 was dead, nope, it's not.
Never dead.
It's coming up. It's still there in the background. It's making headwind.
Well, it's the way to generate a revenue for Microsoft, unlike some other products as yet. So the other interesting thing on Azure was also too was that Azure's now faster growing than AWS. That's another little fact we picked up as well, wasn't it?
That's been like that for a while though.
Yeah, but I think the press seem to be, you know, again noting it out now. You know, it's very interesting. But anyway, let's let you get on with the rest of your news there.
New enhancements to the Azure AD pass-through authentication preview. They've simplified the end-user sign-on experience by removing the need for users to enter their usernames when they access cloud apps like URLs, like tenant-specific URLs, for example, like outlook.office365.com. So, for example, if you're on a computer connected to the domain, previously with Azure AD pass-through authentication, you had to put your username in, hit tab. You didn't have to put your password in, but it went straight through. But now you don't even have to put your username in. Brilliant. Also, to improve user sign-in security with public key, public and private key encryption between Azure AD and on-premise agents. That's in addition to the secure HTTPS they used before, or they use currently as well. They also now support using any attribute configured as an alternate ID in Azure AD Connect as a username. Now, also, too, you only need to use two open ports to set it up. Remember, it is outbound only. That is the advantage of using Azure AD pass-through authentication, because you don't need to open ports up inbound. It's only outbound. And those two ports now are only port 80 and port 443. So this seriously is one of those products in Microsoft, which is the new ADFS and new password sync. It's really coming to the point now that it meets all the requirements. Anybody that has ADFS at the moment who are using it, because even third-party applications or custom applications, seriously check out Azure AD Premium and ADFS up there as a service, because you can meet all those requirements and do everything that you need up in the cloud, and you don't have to have all those servers and open up those ports in the firewall like Swiss cheese. And the last part of the news I've got here is Microsoft Cognitive Services generally availability for Face API, Computer Vision API, and Content Moderator. Microsoft's Cognitive Services enables developers to create the next generation of applications that they can see, hear, speak, understand, and interpret needs using natural methods of communication. If you're wondering what Face API is, it detects human faces and compares similar ones, organizes people into groups according to visual similarity, and identifies previously tagged people and their emotions in images. Computer Vision API, what is that? It's where it gives you the tools to understand the contents of any image. It creates tags that identify objects, beings like celebrities or actions in an image, and crafts coherent sentences to describe it. You can now detect landmarks and handwriting in images. Content Moderator, what that is, it's where it provides machine-assisted moderation of text and images, augmented with human review tools. Video moderation is available in preview as part of Azure Media Services. Now, just quickly, I've got a quick soundbite here of Cognitive Services, Rob. I just want to quickly play this, because Cognitive Services is one of those big topics that people are talking about, and it is fairly hot topic at the moment in Azure. And this goes for just over a minute, which basically gives you a quick A to Z of a quick rundown of what Cognitive Services is and why you should care.
All right, let's have it.
We can really think of Cognitive Services as Microsoft's way of taking breakthroughs in machine intelligence and make them easily accessible to you. So, you know, we have all these breakthroughs, but they're really enabling you to build intelligent applications. So Cognitive Services includes 25 APIs from a wide range of areas in machine intelligence. So you have work that we've done in vision, in speech, in natural language processing, knowledge, and search. So why Microsoft Cognitive Services? So first of all, they're easy. These are all cloud services. They're REST APIs. They're designed to be very, very simple to use, things you can add to your application really trivially to immediately start benefiting from these kind of technologies. They're also flexible. By nature of being cloud services, you can integrate them with the language of your choice. They're platform agnostic. And finally, they're tested. So these are based on technologies that Microsoft has worked on for decades. You have, you know, work from Microsoft Research, from Bing, from our Cloud and Enterprise division. All of the top research that we're using to power our own applications is showing up and now accessible to you. So you're using some of the same technology that powers Cortana or powers Xbox, but now you can add it to your own application. And finally, we've done our best to try to have, you know, quality of documentation to make it super straightforward and easy to be able to add these into your own application.
And last piece of news I got here is Discover and Act on Insights with new Azure monitoring and diagnostics capabilities. Microsoft have introduced new monitoring and capabilities in Azure. Map out process and server dependencies with Service Map, a new technology in Azure Insight and Analytics to make it easier to troubleshoot and plan ahead for future changes or migrations. Also use DNS Analytics, a new solution in Azure Insight and Analytics to help you visualize real-time security, performance, and operations-related data for your DNS servers. Also use the Smart Diagnostics functionality in Azure Application Insights to diagnose sudden changes in the performance or usage of your web applications. So there you go. More info of that in my blog and in the show notes. And that's all I've got for news on this side.
Cool. All right. Well, the Cognitive Server is very interesting. I saw a demo from Microsoft where they feed in tweets about a product into the Cognitive Services and then they spit out whether the tweets are positive, negative, or neutral, and they can base their responses to the product on those tweets and what people are actually saying about. So a very cool service, actually. Something to have a look at. Now, Office 365 news, well, I suppose maybe, but have you heard or seen the new preview of the To-Do app from Microsoft, young Mark?
It's called Outlook Calendar, Reminder.
No, it's not. What happened is Microsoft bought the Wunderlist product and turned it into todo.microsoft.com. It provides you that ability to connect using a live account or an Office 365 account. And I must admit that I'm having a bit of trouble getting it to work with Office 365. I've done everything that it should, but it still doesn't seem to want to log in for some reason, so maybe it's not enabled on my tenant. Still playing with that. It's a bit disappointing, I must admit. It's fairly basic. Obviously, it's the first iteration, and it will improve, and it's going to link into your Outlook, Office 365 Outlook tasks, and hopefully we'll see some improvements down the track. But if you want to give it a go, go to todo.microsoft.com, log in with your Office 365 account. You may have to enable it in your admin portal. If you don't have any luck, you can use a Windows Live account, and basically just allows you to put to-do items, tick them off the list, and have multiple to-do lists there if you need to. So not bad, but again, hopefully we can see it integrated with things like Flow and other Office 365 services.
Hey, Rob, question for you. With that, the thing I like about the reminder function on the iOS, I can say to Siri, I can say, hey, Siri, when I get to, say, Westfield's Hornsby, remind me to buy such and such. Can you do that with this?
So what Microsoft are releasing with Flow is the ability to do the geographic or the geolocation. So I'm not sure if it's there just yet, but they certainly have it on the roadmap, and I would assume that will then integrate with the to-do function. So at the moment, no, to-do is a very basic, just taking lists like Wunderlist used to be, with probably a lot less functionality, some people in Wunderlist might say. But okay. I think we've got to look forward to what is the possibility here. And the integration, I know, with Flow is going to have the geolocation ability. So you will be able to kick off a Flow and potentially pull up a do down the track. So I'm pretty sure that's coming, but probably not here yet.
Okay.
Speaking about passwords and all your ADFS stuff, Microsoft now have the ability for you to log in to your favorite Microsoft account with no password. Oh, how's that possible? That's possible because it uses your phone. So what happens, you can set it all up. And when you log in, the phone will be sent a confirmation, which you have to then accept, and it will log you in. You don't need to put your password in. So that's pretty cool.
So this is like using the same technology as multi-factor authentication. Whereas your password used to be the first factor, your phone used to be the second factor, but now they're just basically using that same technology, but rather than putting the first factor in, you can do single factor authentication with just your phone.
Well, I suppose it is a bit of two-factor. It's not quite, maybe it's 1.5, but again, from a user's point of view, I think it does make it nice and simple, but it does maintain a little bit more security. Perhaps the password's still there, but again, something to have a look at. We'll put the details in the show notes. You can have a look and play with that. So again, we'll make
it different ways to look. Different ways to look at that is because it is with your phone, you might think that it could be more secure because it's the thing is, like, if you had a password, people could probably try and guess that password and log in, whereas with a phone, they'd have to have your phone.
Yeah, but then think about in an office, the phone sits next to you, you leave your phone, you go somewhere. So look, you know, there are pluses and minuses. I think it's a matter, as with any security, it's just, you know, working out what works well, what is convenient, and obviously the more security, the better. Personally, I'd rather have a two-factor password and numbers, make it as secure as possible, but the option is there if you want to have a look at it. So I'll put the details in the show notes for people to have a read and also maybe a play with. Now, the other thing that's come out is that Power BI is having some change in its feature set. What's happening is that Microsoft, or it's got feedback from users, that there's not a lot of differentiation between the pro version and the free version of Power BI. So basically what they're doing is they're aligning the features, but they're taking the sharing capability out of the free product, which you can get without any license, any Office 365, and they're making the shareable part in the pro version. So again, we'll put the details in the show notes on that. So it's good that the features now will match. You'll now get faster refresh, you'll get more data that you can pull from in the free version. The limitation is going to be the shareability. So you won't be able to share it with, you know, a lot of external parties as you probably can now. So Microsoft in this blog post indicated that if you are using Power BI, you'll be able to automatically go to the trial for 12 months of the pro product, so which allow you to continue to use the features you're familiar with, but again, about 12 months time, it will revert to two very distinct products. One where you can share the information quickly and easily, which is the commercial product, and the free product will remain, still have a lot more features, but again, it'll basically be single user, which sort of makes sense when you think about it. So again, keep that in mind when you're working with Power BI. Now, I suppose a bit of Microsoft news in general was that they recently announced at an EDU presentation a couple of days ago, Windows 10S, which I suppose in some ways is a competitor to the Chromebooks. It's not quite as cheap, but they also announced a Surface laptop, which looks really, really schmick. Again, it's a premium product, but certainly very enticing. That's now on sale. You can pre-order that. I think in Australia it will be they're shipping from August.
Looks quite a nice machine. It
looks really good. Yeah,
it does. By the sounds of it, I think it comes pre-installed with Windows 10S, which is like, from my understanding, it's not like the full 32/64-bit operating system.
Well, what it is the limitation is the applications for 10S have to come from the store. So
the store,
yeah. But I think it's maybe 60, 70 bucks, you can buy a Windows 10 Pro license.
No, it's free for the first year.
Is it free for the first
year? It's free for the first year is what they said. And basically, all you do, you just go there and get a free Windows 10 Pro upgrade, and you get Windows 10 Pro just like that. Because the machine itself, the specs, it comes in, I think, three or four different flavors.
Up to
16 gigabytes of RAM.
It's the same and sort of specs as
the brand new Surface. Yeah, and the brand new Intel i7 generation 5, I think, or 6 CPU. It's up there with the specs. It's like a really nice machine. Like, I'm seriously thinking about getting one.
Yeah, I'm pretty tempted too, I must admit. It's a matter of deciding whether you, for me anyway, deciding, okay, this is going to be a Chromebook, I'm going to do everything in the cloud, I'm going to have the minimum machine,
no,
I'm going to do everything in the
put
cloud.
Pro on or, it. Put put Pro on it.
I want to see S. I want to understand what S is. But on the other side, you know, the general thing is more resources in machines mean that they do last longer, but there's obviously an additional cost. But I'm certainly very tempted. I want to go in and obviously have a touch and a feel and see what it's actually like. But all the specs, all the information I see, it looks like a very spectacular machine.
It's a no-brainer. Like if you did take up the advantage of the free Pro upgrade in the first 12 months, you could use the best of both worlds. You can still get stuff from the store, but also to install your own apps.
But again, from my point of view, from the user experience, I want to live in that world with a 10S just to see what it's like and make sure everything works. And I've got enough Pro machines here anyway. But we'll see. We'll make a decision when the machine becomes available and we actually get a touch and a feel. Now, the last thing that I thought was really, really important out of that EDU announcement was the focus on Microsoft Teams. Teams does everything. Teams in education, students, teachers, everything. So a very strong indication for those people who haven't yet looked at Teams or don't think that they're going to be as popular as they are. From what I see in the market and from what I see Microsoft pushing, you really need to be on board with Teams, get into it. And the way you get to it with an Office 365 login is teams.microsoft.com. There are apps for all your mobile devices. Start using it, and it gives you a huge amount of functionality. And I really, really think that this is the way forward when it comes to collaboration. So again, Teams to me is a further indication from this Microsoft presentation how important that product's going to be going forward. So lots and lots of stuff happening in Office 365. Obviously, lots and lots of stuff happening in Azure. But as we were waiting for people are obviously now waiting. What's the big news, Mark?
The big news is I got a job at Microsoft. Now working at Microsoft.
What's your official title?
Well, today's date is 4th of May. So I start on the 8th of May, which is next Monday, and I am a Azure/PowerShell PFE.
Translation, please.
Well, this is the thing with Microsoft. It's all acronyms, you see. So there's TSPs, PFEs, there's all those, and CSPs, everything else. But yeah, PFE is a Premier Field Engineer, which I think is very exciting indeed, because I'll be not in the same place at the same time every day. I'll be meeting with different enterprise level customers, and these customers are not small companies, because these are the customers that can afford to pay. I was at an enterprise customer the other day, and I sort of came across the bill for and it's in the tune of around $500,000, their bill for Premier support. So it's not cheap, but what you get out of it is it's like the top level support you get with somebody that comes on your premises from Microsoft, i.e. me, and helps them out with any reactive type of things. It comes like pre-built or pre-bundled with support hours. But also too, not only that, the other side of it is it comes with what's called proactive hours as well. So I can come along and host workshops with the companies.
You're already drinking the Kool-Aid and selling the stuff to the poor ladies and gentlemen, right?
Exactly.
Just calm down. The only reason that Marky Marky got out of his deathbed today was so that he could make this announcement. So we're very excited about it for Marky.
I'm very excited.
We're going to hear lots and lots, and we've spoken heaps about, so we do need to get on with something. So let me just do two quick things for myself. I have released a PowerShell introduction to PowerShell for Azure training course into my online academy at ciaappsacademy.com, and I've also announced a live SharePoint training course, which basically we don't have a Skype for Business. You can interact, you'll be given tasks, and again we'll do training over five Fridays in June. So if you're interested in that, again head to my blog or head to ciaopsacademy.com.au. But Mark, I think we better get into it. What's up for this episode?
Okay, we're talking to the remaining guests from Experts Live in Melbourne at the beginning of April when we were down there. We spoke to three of the guests before, which were three of the people that we ran into, Steve Hosking, Oren Thomas, Tao Yang. But now on this episode, we're talking to the remaining people that I ran into and hijacked in the halls of the location. So we'll be speaking to Daniel Ma all about Azure Remote App version 2, which was announced about a month ago. So we'll talk about that, which is all Citrix based. Also, I'll be speaking to Thomas Maurer, who's from overseas. I think it's Switzerland. It could be wrong. I stand to be corrected. But he came out. He's another Azure, another MVP for Microsoft. I'm not too sure it's Azure, but he's definitely an MVP. We'll be talking about Azure Pack versus Azure Stack. And also the great Wally Mead, who used to work at Microsoft for a number of years, and not anymore, but he is nicknamed Mr. SCCM or SMS before it turned into SCCM. So we'll be talking to Wally Mead as well. So all of those three people coming up here on the Need to Know podcast. All right, we're here with Daniel Ma. Daniel, how are you going?
I'm good.
Daniel, whereabouts are you working at the moment?
I'm working at a company called InFront Consulting. I'm a principal consultant there that works around cloud, data center, and enterprise client technologies.
And you're also a Microsoft MVP as well.
Yes, I've been an MVP for about 6 years now, all in the cloud and data center space.
So the other part of the MVP is you're organising an event, a pretty cool event called Experts Live, and that's where we are at the moment here in Melbourne.
Yeah, that's right. We're in the middle of Experts Live Australia. It's the first time we've held this conference under that name. Previously used to be called System Center Universe, which we ran same venue last year.
So tell us about the history of the event, System Center Universe. Those who probably haven't heard of it before, it was probably based, let me guess, about it revolved around System Center as a focus. So tell me about the event, the history, where it's held all around the world, all that sort of stuff.
Sure. So Experts Live is really a community-driven conference. We get speakers from all over the world, also local speakers. This is the first time we're holding it here in Australia under this brand. Last year it was known as System Center Universe. So last year was a one-day conference. This year's 2 days, more content, more speakers.
And is it just in Australia or is it a global event?
Yeah, it's kind of a global event. We have the same conference running in US, Europe, Netherlands. It actually started in Netherlands back in 2008 with about 60 people, and that event's grown to over 1,400 people attending. So we're there to really serve the community, provide a forum for these experts to, you know, share their knowledge and experience.
Okay, so it's been going for nearly 10 years. So next year it'll be the 10th anniversary.
Yeah, you could consider it that. It's for Australia, we're kind of new to this. So Australia was one of the first kind of newer events. But we've been looking to bring it around Australia potentially, even to New Zealand as well.
Fantastic. So in your opinion, the feeling that you're getting from the conference at the moment, is it been going pretty well so far?
Yeah, so I've had really good feedback about, you know, some of the sessions and the sharing and the learning that they're getting from these experts. So these experts have real live experience and have deployed these technologies. It's not meant to be seen as a sales and marketing kind of event. We're here to provide real world application to kind of Microsoft technologies in the cloud, the data center, and around enterprise mobility.
I've been talking to a few people around the conference and also heard the same feedback that a lot of them do like this event. It's not like other events where it's more focused on marketing and getting messages across and a bit of sales tactics. It's more, this event's more authentically technical in that aspect.
Yeah, so we've got, in terms of the speaker lineup, we've got over 30 speakers. Over 20 of them are MVPs, so we really want to support the MVP community. And yeah, so the attendees will go away, learn something, go away and try to look to implement that in their organisations. That's kind of our key driver.
And so you yourself, you've done a session here at Experts Live. And so what was that about?
Yeah, so I in addition to organising the event, I've been speaking as well. So I presented on...
Was that tough to do both, to organise and do a presentation?
Yeah, it's always hard. Don't get much sleep, but you do it for the course. So I actually presented on heritage apps with RDS 2016 and a replacement for what we call Azure Remote App called Citrix XenApp Essentials. So Azure Remote App was, if you didn't know, was the first Azure service to be deprecated from the Azure portal.
Didn't know that.
Yeah, so Azure Remote App ran completely in the ASM portal, or the classic portal as we know it, and the replacement, they made that announcement in August last year, and they gave users using, organizations using this 1 year before they had to change. So at the time they announced it, they announced that the replacement would be called Citrix, with a partnership with Citrix, ZenApp Express, but that service wasn't available. It was only made available in at the end of March 2017, which is only a few days ago. So now customers have got the next couple months to migrate. So my session was really on demonstrating what Citrix ZenApp Essentials is all about.
Okay, so one of the pain points I remember, like back, so CSP, it's currently 2017 at the moment, last year 2016, CSP came to Australia in the Australian data centres in November 2015 is the date. I remember it like it was yesterday. And one of the pain points when CSP came out was the fact that at that point, Azure Remote App version 1 wasn't available as part of CSP licensing because it was on ASM, and the classic ASM, which is Azure Service Management, is not part of CSP. So that was one of the pain points. Now, I think the difference is with this, we can nickname this new Citrix Essentials based Azure Remote App, Azure Remote App V2. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, that's correct. So a lot of people have been calling it V2 of Azure Remote App, and it is really V2. It runs in the ARM portal. But the key difference here is it's not only Microsoft technologies here, it's actually Citrix with Microsoft. So the components of Citrix ZenApp Essentials consists of an Azure backend, so all your infrastructure runs in Azure, all those ZenApp servers, you know, domain controllers and so on. And you have a Citrix cloud component, which is their management layer for managing the entire Citrix ZenApp Essentials kind of infrastructure that you spin up.
Okay, so then you've got, you're confusing me. So you've got like a both here. You've got the Azure side of it and you've got the Citrix cloud side of it. So is it convoluted in that respect?
So you actually got two portals at play. You manage things, you provision things, or you sign up for it in the Azure portal, and then you manage it from the Citrix cloud portal. So in terms of billing then, it's also different billing components. You've got to pay for the Azure infrastructure that you consume. You've got to pay for RDS cals from Microsoft, or you can bring your own RDS cals from on-premises. And then you've got the Citrix cloud management component that you pay for. So all those combined to provide basically what we call Citrix ZenApp Essentials.
So you've got all these different components on your bill, but if I remember you correctly, it's one single bill still, but all different components on that one bill, yeah?
Yeah, so it's all through the Azure Marketplace. So you can sign up basically for a trial on ZenApp Essentials through the Marketplace. Your minimum commitment is 25 users, which is actually higher than the minimum commitment of what we had with the Azure Remote App, which was 20 users, or you could even go as low as 5 back then as well.
Okay, so being in ARM, it's all template-driven, so you fill out the details like as if you're doing anything else in ARM or Azure Resource Manager, and I guess Citrix is making use of that themselves, so you can fill in the details of what you want to do, your environment, the name of it, how many servers you want, and things like that, and then what the templates and transferred from Citrix to Microsoft to Azure and back again to the environment set up, yeah?
Correct, yeah. So there's templates underneath all of this. It's very, very easy to provision and use ZenApp Essentials infrastructure. Once it's provisioned, then everything's done really from a management and monitoring point of view from the Citrix Cloud portal, which is Citrix's own portal in the cloud for managing ZenApp and Zen Desktop infrastructures.
Okay, so tell us about the Citrix side of it. So once it's all set up with the environment and users are using it, tell us about the Citrix components. What's involved there?
So there's multiple Citrix components at play here. We have basically your golden image that we have. We have the VDA agent in there, the virtual desktop agent. We have Citrix Storefront, which is providing that web interface where users go into to launch the application. Then we also have NetScaler. There's a NetScaler gateway to provide secure access to those applications over the internet. And finally, you have the Citrix Receiver component, which is the component that exists on the end user device where they actually go to launch those applications.
So if I put my user hat on, I'm thinking like Netflix. So I want to watch Netflix, right? I don't know why you would, but I'm just using it as an example. I want to watch Netflix high definition across the wire through, say, I want to publish NetApp as an app
through Citrix Zen app and I want to watch it in all its glory, beautiful, high definition. Is that possible with Citrix?
Yeah, so with the recent release of Citrix Zen app and I guess the more recent versions of Zen app, we have a technology in there called Framehawk, which is there to provide very high definition video over low latency, you know, unstable network connections. So that technology together with the ICA, the previous ICA and HDX protocols from Citrix provides that level of performance for playing videos over low latency connections.
Another use case is probably AutoCAD with massive like high drawings that really make a big a pull on the graphics and things like that.
Sure, yeah. So I guess that Framehawk is also suited towards those high consuming graphical applications, CAD, 3D, and so on.
And so this Azure Remote App V2 with Citrix, all of this is now possible, yeah?
Yes. So we leveraging the versions from Zen App together with Azure Compute instances.
Do you have to have special compute instances at the N series that support that?
I believe that's coming soon. I know in Australia we don't have the N series machines, but once we do, then you should be able to create custom farms using these N series machines and leverage the graphic capabilities of them.
Beautiful. That's really exciting. So when did you say it just came out? Just a few days ago?
So yeah, it came out at the end of Q1 2017, so 31st of March 2017.
Fantastic. And the best best way that people can get started with that?
So the best way is really to go to the Azure Marketplace, search for ZenApp Essentials, and sign up for a trial. And it will give you guided steps on how to provision, set up an account in the Citrix Cloud, and get you started on that.
Now, a question for you, which I've been asking everybody, is in your opinion, last 12 months, what do you think has been the biggest change in the Microsoft world?
Well, there's always changes going on in the Microsoft world, and especially in this cloud era. Biggest change I've seen is really a move away from kind of an IT pro focus to more of a developer focus, and really actually into a new world of DevOps. You know, DevOps is a new term that, well, it's not really new, but it's being thrown around a lot more these days.
And everyone has a different opinion on what DevOps is.
That's right. So actually we're having a session at the Global Azure Bootcamp, which is in a couple weeks' time, and we're having a joint session with the developers, and we're going to argue about what DevOps is all about.
Yeah, because they've got their spin on it, and we've got our spin on it.
Correct, yeah. Myself coming from an IT pro kind of background, yeah, we do.
I spoke to Adam Kogan about his view on DevOps. Adam's Microsoft Regional Director from SSW, and he had his spin on it, and it's like, oh, I've never heard that before, because I'm more of an IT pro background.
Correct. Yeah, so you think IT pros, they don't get involved in coding, but today I think, you know, every IT pro has to, you know, do some development work. Yeah.
Yep. So. Daniel, what's the best way people can get in contact with you?
Yeah, sure. I'm on Twitter. My Twitter handle is DanielMar268. Or you can look for me on LinkedIn or look for me on the mfrankconsulting.com website.
Fantastic, Daniel. Thank you very much for your time today.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Mark.
We're here with Thomas Maurer at Experts Live in Melbourne 2017. Hey, Thomas, how are you going?
Hey, good to see you. Yeah, everything's great. I'm a little bit tired, but conference is great, going great so far.
Can I call you Tom for short?
Absolutely, yeah, just call me Tom. My friends call me Tom, so that's absolutely fine.
Excellent. Tom, listen, I hijacked you in the corridors as such, because I wanted to talk to you on the podcast about what you do, who you are, and everything else. Now, as I told you when we're coming down the escalators, I know who you are, because when I was Googling things back in the day, because I'm an ex-IT pro, I used to do a lot of searching for fixes and problems and stuff with Windows and all sorts of stuff, right? And your blog or something used to come up in the lists. And so all of those times, I know who you are from that. So do you want to give the folk out there like an idea of like who you are, what your background is and so forth?
Yeah, definitely, yeah. So right now I work as a cloud architect for a company called ITNetX, which is focused on Microsoft technology in Switzerland. So we are doing a lot of cloud projects based on Azure, Azure Stack, Windows Server, System Center, and all that kind of stuff. And we also do some workplace parts. So we really focus on the Microsoft part. And my focus there is right now, I'm working a lot with service providers, but I also do a lot of Azure and Azure Stack nowadays. That's my work, what I do. So the blog really came out a little bit from my previous work, where I worked as a system administrator, started as a system administrator and did some engineering at a service provider where I was responsible for the Microsoft part. So I used really the internet to find fixes for my problems. So I thought if I find a fix for a problem I have, I probably also publish it. So that was the thing. Why there is my blog? It was basically a notebook for myself. If I fix something, and can also help other people, of course, as well.
It's funny, that's how I started my blog post, which started all those years ago, but probably not as an active blogger as you. That's exactly the same reason. Is if I find something that was hard to fix, I'd sort of put it all together and write my own blog, and then hopefully if somebody else gets any benefit out of it, well, so be it. That's the whole point about doing a blog, more first and foremost for yourself, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's... I'm so thankful for like people doing, getting out their information, helping people to understand things and fixing things. And so I just want to give something back. That was the purpose in the first place. Yeah.
So you mentioned you were from Switzerland.
Yeah, that's correct.
And you've been in IT for how long?
Oh, to be honest, I can't really remember. I think it's not that long ago, but it's. I think it started 2006, maybe, or I finished my apprenticeship in 2006 or something. I started with the first thing I did when I started my apprenticeship was installing Windows XP, which just came out around that time frame. And then, like 2 years later, I started my apprenticeship.
Okay, so I want to ask the next question: how old you are? Because just saying that alone, based on my history, I sort of got an idea of where you are on that side of things. But I guess that's not really an important question. But what is an important question is we are at Experts Live 2017. You've traveled a long way and done three sessions here. Let's cover them off. So start with the first one.
Yeah, so the first one was really based on Microsoft Azure Stack. So the idea was to give people a little bit of an overview of what Microsoft Azure Stack really is. Because Microsoft really announced it at Ignite 2015, if I remember correctly. And since then, a lot of things have changed, and they made a good media buzz out of it. And a lot of people are very interested in Azure Stack, and they really want to bring this cloud consistency they have with Azure to the on-premise world. And so they came up with Azure Stack, and I want to show people how that works in the future.
So are you just getting into this part of the world now with Azure Stack, or have you been part of Azure Pack before that?
Oh yeah, so definitely. I was part of Azure Pack since the beginning. I did like some early project part of Azure Pack, building up it, bringing environments up for service providers based on Azure Pack and System Center and all that good stuff. And now with the focus more and more to Azure, I also do that Azure Stack stuff as well. So it's still a mix. It's going to be a mix between both. But I started very early with building clouds.
So the difference is with Azure Pack and Azure Stack, from my understanding, is Azure Pack, it's more customizable as to what you can put in there. So you can use any existing hardware, put it all together, install whatever you need, and that's pretty much Azure Pack, put it all together, right? But with Azure Stack now, they've announced it's going to come out as an appliance on Cisco, Lenovo, HP, and Dell, right? Now, do you like that direction yourself personally? Do you think that's a good, smart move? Or do you want, I mean, what's your opinion on that?
Yeah. So, of course, like both scenarios have, or both solutions have advantages and disadvantages, right? So, in my personal opinion, it took a while to understand, but if you understand the value of building that, I think it's definitely a good decision. Because since I'm a guy who has worked with a lot of Azure Pack deployments, I knew that it can be sometimes challenging. And you do the work over and over again. So you're going to a architecture and design phase, to a building phase, and then you do the whole, like if you need to, troubleshooting and fixing problems, because you have totally different components from in each environment, right? So with buying an appliance, everything looks the same. You don't have to go through a whole design process and architecture process. And everything is pre-designed, pre-validated, and tested. So you basically can make sure that it just works, right? So that's the approach there. And to be honest, like designing infrastructure as a service or a virtualization platform, for a lot of companies, this is not interesting anymore. For some of them, still is. But for a lot of them, it's the value really comes with the services on top of an infrastructure or a virtualization environment. And I can see that it depends really on the customer, but I think in general it's a good thing.
So, like, but the companies like are used to charging out their time for building the services and the hardware and with Azure Pack. And I know it's a lot of repeatable work, but it's also good money coming in. Once you get good at it, you can sort of do it over and over again with your eyes closed. People pay money for it with Azure Pack because it's Azure Stack because it's now an appliance. You don't have to worry about that. Now, it means companies are going to have to evolve and change and adapt and keep up with, rather than pushing out or offering services to install it, which could take, what, maybe a week or so, they're going to have to offer different things. And are companies going to, like, struggle with that change?
I would say so, yeah. So, yeah, as you mentioned, there was good money in doing, or I guess it still is, in good money in installing everything, designing environments from scratch, and help people to get there. But, again, as you said, with Azure Stack, this goes more or less away. So there will be companies which will be moving to that cloud-based approach, and they will move forward. They will do the transition, and there will be companies which won't make it in that transition. They are probably staying and will be still happy to sell you some hardware, and that's their business, right? And that will work for the next couple of years, but then later on, I guess they have to involve as well if they want to stay.
Separate the men from the boys.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, that was your first session. What about your second session you did?
So the second session was really covering NanoServer in Windows 7 2016. So I was really talking about why there is a case for NanoServer, what the today's challenges are. And I was also talking about then how you deploy an image, how you use it in production, how you do things with it, how you manage it and things like that, to really show people a little bit in a deeper sense what it really is. Because it turns out a lot of people saw it, that it exists, but no one really tested it here. So I was going a little bit deeper on that one.
I set NanoServer up back in the day, I think late last year in Azure, in the portal, in ARM. As soon as I set it up, I then opened the port so I can remote PowerShell to it, but I couldn't because there wasn't any certificate on the server. I think it was a fault on Microsoft's behalf. Anyway, I had to put the code in PowerShell to ignore the certificate, the validity stuff. Okay, so NanoServer is a nice little product. It's like Server Core back in the day, but it's less than Server Core, and I know Jeffrey Snow has talked a lot about it. With NanoServer, I've got a question for you. Do you know if you can run things like PowerShell modules on top of it?
Yeah, so you will have a couple of PowerShell modules which will work on NanoServer as well. Not every commandlet, though, or every PowerShell module will work. It depends a little bit on what they are using. So PowerShell is on NanoServer is PowerShell Core, and this is based on the Core CLR, and this has been based on ASP.NET Core and .NET Core.
Similar to Linux.
Yeah, exactly. So whatever runs on ASP, which runs on PowerShell Core, that will run also on NanoServer.
So basically whatever runs on PowerShell Linux will run PowerShell NanoServer, because they're both running .NET Core.
Yeah, I haven't tried it, but that would be the case, yeah.
Yeah, okay, all right. In theory.
Yeah, in theory, that would be
in theory.
The case.
Okay, what was your third session?
So my first session was an overview session about Windows Server 2016. So it was called the best of Windows Server 2016. So I tried to pick like the most interesting parts and do a session about it, because there's so much stuff in there. I could spend days or weeks talking about Windows Server, right? And I tried to put one thing into a session and put out the best Hyper-V features and storage features and so on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. And what was, give me the top two features out of the top ones that you presented.
So for the VMware administrator, we were definitely like adding hot add network adapters to a Hyper-V VM. No, but without kidding, I think it's hard to pick. But if I would need to pick it would
be your favorites.
Yeah, so it would be shielded virtual machines. I think that's a really big one.
Yeah.
And then on the storage side, this would be Storage Spaces Direct. I think that's the most thing. There's a lot of others. It's really hard to pick. But I think just right now, in this moment, I would pick those two.
Yeah, based on security, I think shielded VMs is good because that way, being a consumer in the space of public cloud or private cloud even, the people that are managing those VMs don't get access to it. And so it makes you a lot more trustworthy of that, putting your VMs in the power of somebody else.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, especially if you're now thinking about the public cloud or service providers and building that hybrid cloud scenario, which Microsoft really is looking for, because that's their business case, right? So you can run the same virtual machine on any platform, everywhere. And so making that virtual machine more secure and protecting the data inside of it becomes more and more important.
So what I'll do is I'll ask you the same question, which I've been asking a lot of people already, and then I've sort of prepped you for this as well, because I don't know where to put you on the spot, because I've asked all these other people, and I was like, good question. So the question is, in the previous 12 months, what do you think, in your opinion, has been the biggest change in the Microsoft space?
Good question. No, but yeah, so it's really hard to say what is going on in the last 12 months, but when I have to choose it, how Microsoft really works. So even if I work with Microsoft and I had some good talks with a lot of people inside Microsoft in the past couple of years, what really has changed is they're listening more, even more. They're more interested in working together with you. There's more interaction. I remember just we spent some time at the Microsoft campus talking about an issue we had, and like we had the chance, really, a great opportunity to just meet one of the developers of the solution itself and talking about him, what the issue is, and he helps us troubleshooting the issue and things like that. And that was so crazy impressive, because usually don't get access to any of that. And I mean, that's okay, but this was really impressive. And it shows the openness of Microsoft. It shows how things are changing inside Microsoft. And Microsoft really is waiting for feedback. And this is really the main big part or the difference I can see in which happened in the last 12 months.
Excellent. All right. We might start to wrap things up because we're coming up to the roughly 15-minute mark. And so, look, thanks for spending the time with us. Now, if people want to get in contact with you, what's the best way to do that?
Well, the best way probably is to visit my blog or my website. It's www.thomasmaurer.ch. Or follow me on Twitter at Thomas Maurer, and you can just contact me about those two ways. You will find email addresses and everything. Yeah, that's basically it.
And have you got anything final you want to just quickly add on to the end of this?
Well, not really. I think
anything you want to plug, any other events you're doing very quickly?
I'm going to speak in a couple of events in Europe and in the US later this year. So I will speak in Munich as well as in Berlin for Exports Live Europe. And then going to talk there about cloud stuff as well. So hopefully see some of you guys who are listening there at the event. That would be great.
Excellent. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Mark. It was nice meeting you.
All right. We're here with Wally Mead at the Experts Live conference in Melbourne. Wally, how are you going?
Doing well. Thanks.
Wally, just give us an intro as to who you are and your history and why you're very significant in the IT community.
Not sure I'm significant, but I was with Microsoft for 22 years, mostly in the Configuration Manager product group. So I started working with SMS before it was SMS 1.0 and then grew up into Configuration Manager and left around ConfigMan 2012 R2. Came to work for Cyrosun to help get them into Configuration Manager technologies. And get to do a lot of evangelism and still working with the Configuration Manager product. So
I was going to say, what were you doing in the product group at Microsoft with the Configuration Manager and SMS? What were you doing exactly? Was it just the evangelism part of it?
Partly that. Initially, it was training. So I was in the Microsoft universities, what they used to call it now, it's Microsoft Learning. Mm-hmm. And I helped write the training courses on SMS 1.0 through 2.0. And then I went to product support for a year and did a year of training of support guys on of SMS 2.0. And then I went to the product group. And in the product group, my main responsibilities were evangelism, so speaking at all the events on what SMS and then Config Manager was. working with tap customers, so customers that would take our beta versions of SMS or Config Manager, put it in their production environments to test it out for us, because everybody's environment is different, and Microsoft is really weird in their environment, so we'd find things that worked well for us, didn't work as well for the customers because they weren't local admins like we all were at Microsoft. So working with TAP customers to do that.
Just for people that don't understand TAP, the TAP stands for?
Technology Adoption Program.
Right, and that's now changed, isn't it, into something else now, I understand.
I think they have, internally they still call it TAP, but I think externally they might have.
Different official name.
Right, yeah. Yep. But yeah, it's just a way of getting, it's beyond the beta program, which anybody can get the beta, but for betas, people aren't allowed to put it in production. Mm-hmm. So it's a lab-only test environment. TAPs, you're required to put in production. So you're taking our beta release products or release candidate, whatever it is, and testing it out for us in your production environment. So it's got to be good enough quality for you to be able to trust it at that point in time.
Actually, I heard one of the presenters saying a quote, everybody's got a test environment, but some people are lucky enough to have a second production environment.
Yeah. And I commented on that yesterday. I was talking about my second session yesterday about having a tech preview site, a lab site, and a production site. So you need to have all three of them. Now, some of you guys don't have a lab site. Your lab site is your production environment, and you make all your mistakes there. And the third thing I would do in the product group was working with the MVPs. So I was the liaison between the configuration manager MVPs and the product group. So I'd help make sure that they got the information they needed so they were aware of the products before we released them so they could be our evangelists out in the field and they could help support us on the forums, the customers. And the last thing is, if you ever went to an event like the old Microsoft Management Summit or TechEds, and you played around with any hands-on labs for Configuration Manager or SMS in the old days, those were the things I wrote for them.
So does that mean, so you're doing all the training, a lot of evangelizing, a lot of in the community and things like that, which is all great stuff. Did that also include doing a lot of events and things like that, talking about SMS and SCCM?
Yeah. For the first, I don't know how many years it was, I was the only person from the product group that would go to any events like TechEd.
Right.
So yeah, it was really bad when we had one version, SMS 2.0, when it first came out, was not in good shape. And I was the only person at the Ask the Experts for the product group there for SMS, and it was a beat up on Wally session. Then SP1 came out, fixed some problems, still had other problems, still beat up on Wally. SP2 came out, everybody loved me, and I was still the only guy there. So it was, hey Wally, you did a great job, you fixed all my problems. I didn't write a single line of code, but I'm glad you helped.
It was just you're the face guy.
Then it was after that they started sending more people to events, primarily when Microsoft really got into the MMS conference, because it was much closer to home. It was usually in Las Vegas, and it's a two-hour plane ride from Redmond area. So they would send a lot more product group down there, and then it started expanding out. So you see a lot more Microsoft representatives at conferences like what is now Ignite versus the old TechEd days and so on.
So what about yourself personally being the front face as such, the unofficial front face of, well, I guess it is the official because you're out there evangelizing the product and you're doing all the events. And people, like, you would have copped a lot of flack, I guess, from people that maybe weren't exactly 100% happy with the product or complaints and such. Did that take a toll on you? Like, did you not take it to heart, or did you just rise above that? Did you have to take all that back to the product team? And not only that, did they listen to all of those good and bad at that point, or how did that work?
There's a lot of things in there. It does take a toll because, like you say, you are the face, whether you want to be or not. I was the face of the product. Mm. So it was, like I said, with the SMS 2.0 thing, it was beat up on Wally days. I would take all that information back to the product group saying, hey, people are complaining about this. I'd file bugs and represent them at what we used to call war team, where we go through the bugs and decide what priority they would have and when we're going to fix them and so on. So I'd try and represent them that way. But I never took it personally. But I had people saying, yeah, they think I was the guy that wrote the product, or I was the guy that designed the product and devs were implementing it.
Like a one-man band.
Right.
Everything.
So I get called the godfather of SMS.
Wouldn't it be great if he could be the one-man band? Yeah, right.
No,
I don't have enough time in the day.
Right. I told people if it was me in charge of this thing and if I was writing it, we would never ship because I'd always find more things I'd want to have fixed before the product would ship, which I know is unrealistic. But I did certainly take all that feedback back to the product group and relay it to them and let them decide what they're going to do with it and just do my best saying, hey, I'm the messenger. Don't shoot me. But I'm trying to do my best of taking your feedback back to them and then relaying to everybody else the way the product is designed to work.
So that took you up to System Center Configuration Manager 2012 R2, was that correct?
Yeah.
Okay, and what happened after that?
I decided it was time for change. It had been 22 years at Microsoft. Microsoft as a company was changing. They wanted to change my role within the organization, so less of an evangelist, less of working in the community, and more just helping design product, and I didn't really want to do that. So a good buddy of mine that used to work at Microsoft with me, he managed, Travis Wright, he used to manage the CDM, Cloud and Data Center Management MVPs as part of System Center. I was doing the config man guys, so we worked a lot together. He had gone to this company called Cyrison, who's System Center Experts is their tagline. And we were just chatting at a conference, actually in Oslo, Norway one time. He said, oh, yeah, if you ever want to change, just let me know. I'll hire you in a second. And then the things were happening at Microsoft that I wasn't within my wheelhouse, I'll say. So I decided, yeah, it's a time for a change, and called him up and said, sure. And so I moved on over, and they said, hey, you keep doing your evangelism, you keep learning the product, you keep knowing it and helping the community, and then we'll start looking at what we can do in configuration manager space. Because we were doing consulting on it, but no products at that point.
Okay, so you're still in the configuration manager space, basically doing what you love doing, the evangelizing. So are you moved into the cloud space with Intune, or are you stuck with the System Center, or are you doing both?
I certainly learned Intune as part of the product group because they were really pushing it. Mm-hmm. I wasn't doing standalone Intune. I was doing the hybrid, integrating Intune with Configuration Manager. I wrote a number of hands-on labs internally for our TAP customers when they were starting to get that integration going. So I learned at that point in time, haven't really used it a whole lot since. I know there's a big push within Cyrus to show that we are all a System Center, including the integration with Microsoft Intune. So,
okay, in your opinion, tell me Intune versus SCCM in, say, 5 years' time.
I know they want to provide more and more feature set for managing Windows devices as well as the laptop, mobile devices in Intune natively. And there's a standalone service. But there's things like operating system deployment. That's really hard to do over the internet. So I don't know if they'll ever get there to you can replace Configuration Manager with a standalone service like Intune cloud-based. So I personally don't think so. And by the time that ever gets there, I'm going to be retired, so I'm not going to care. I was at a MVP summit last fall, I think it was, and Brad Anderson, the corporate VP of management, was up there, Windows and management. He said, Configuration Manager is going to be around as long as people want it, because there was a push a couple years before that to get on the Intune bandwagon, and they just kept seeing people were wanting to stick with the on-prem stuff, maybe move some of their infrastructure up to the cloud with Azure, but still having a Configuration Manager presence. So I think it's going to stick around for a long time yet.
Okay, obviously you got the contacts there still at Microsoft. Mm-hmm. Yep. Are you, now that you're not working at Microsoft, are you an MVP or a Microsoft Regional Director?
Microsoft Regional Director. No, I am an MVP.
Right.
So you have there's a moratorium after you leave Microsoft. You can't be nominated for. You can't become an MVP for 6 months.
Right.
So when
when
that moratorium was over, I got awarded the MVP status, and it's. I think it's my third award now. So
great. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah,
you're pretty much
a Microsoft person still. You're doing what you want, and you're an MVP, and you got the best of what you want.
Yeah.
All right. So you mentioned retirement. Is that planned? Is that coming up soon? Or
well, it's not planned. But I'm to the point now where I think about it. I know I thought about it a lot more at Microsoft as things were changing. And okay, I'm not really liking what we're doing here and what they want me to do. So maybe I'll just go ahead and retire. And but now, as of right now, I'm still happy working, especially with Cyrus and letting me. Still stick in the configuration manager space. And what I'm actually doing now is taking feedback like from this conference back to the product group inside Cyrison, and that's helping direct the configuration manager products we want to have. And we're a much smaller company, so it's much easier for us to react to that feedback than the big ship of Microsoft was. So that's been very, very rewarding being able to help. We've got 5 products out in the configuration manager space right now, including our web-based portal that people are very excited about. So I've had a lot of influence in that, which feels really good.
Okay, so these products you're talking about, do they plug in on top of SCCM, yeah? Or
it depends. So we have, right now we have 4 free products that anybody can go to our website and download. 2 of them are standalone, and two of them directly integrate in the Config Man console. And one of those standalone ones, the last revision, we actually had it so you can run it standalone or integrate into the Config Man console.
Okay, so what do they do? Just tell me about them.
Yeah, so the most popular one is a remote manage app. It was designed as a help desk tool, so you want to have help desk using Configuration Manager to support their customers, but you don't want them in that big console. So this is a scaled down, much scaled down single app that lets you look at some details on clients, kick off client actions like right-click tools, connect up the log file, share, look to see what software is installed, manage collection membership, look at their processes, initiate remote control, initiate whatever actions you want to on your own. So it's kind of a help desk tool. One of the common things that help desk struggles with is you call up and say, hey, Wally, I need help with my computer. What's your computer name? I don't have no idea what my computer name is.
Yeah.
So we wrote a standalone UDA lookup. So I can type in Mark and find out what computers you have a primary relationship with. And then from there, I can actually right-click and launch off a remote managed utility. So again, a help desk tool. Our second most popular one that's really growing in popularity is called the Ticker app. It allows me as an admin to create a ticker that will go out to desktops and will appear as a scrolling banner across the bottom of their display saying power outage on the Exchange server, so it'll be down for an hour, or emergency patches need to be applied, or Cyclone Debbie's hitting, make sure you watch that, we'll be closing early on Friday, or whatever the scenario is.
Like, so who puts these messages out? Is it the IT department that puts the messages out, or is it HR, or just the business?
It would be anybody who has the rights in the Config Man console to do that, because that's one that integrates in the console. You pick a collection, you right-click and say announcement, fill in your color scheme that you want to use, the font size, italicize, whatever, type your text. You can schedule when it starts, when it stops, or you can say get it out there right now. And then it just scrolls across the bottom, going through Configuration Manager, get that message down to clients.
Right, okay. And then the end customer can get that, basically.
Yeah, then it appears on their desktop automatically at the appropriate start time, and it will last until the expiration time, or if they click it, it dismisses it.
Okay.
And the fourth free tool we have is a user-centric app. So if customers are using application model instead of packages and programs, and they want to deploy to users, which is becoming more popular, then this will check and see whether their applications have a requirement rule called primary device equals true, which you really need for user-centric software delivery. And if they don't, we'll let you pick and choose your deployment type for your app and click next, and we'll go and add that requirement rule for you automatically.
Fantastic.
So yeah, those are the four free programs, and we just released a web-based console for Configuration Manager, again, to help keep people out of the full Config Man console and give them like help desk or desktop support, app packagers, managers who just want to run reports, scaled down version that just gives them what they want, but in a web-based interface, you're not tied to an installation of the Configuration Manager console.
That's awesome. And how are you guys going with, I think that there's two, I guess, the biggest challenge when you're writing software and things like that and tools is, I think putting it together is not that really difficult. You just got to know how to do it. And if you're skilled in that area, it's fairly straightforward. But the hardest challenge is marketing and getting it out to market for people to use it. How have you guys coped with that challenge?
Yeah, we do a lot of webinars. So that's one way we help get the word out.
Or podcasts.
Or podcasts, yes. Any type of those social media type events and events that we can do. Those really help. We've had a big marketing campaign with the Configuration Manager Portal, as we call it. It came out in its first beta release towards the end of last year, and we had another one in late January, early February, and just released a product like 3 weeks ago. So that, and just referencing it at events. But yeah, a lot of podcasts and a lot of webcasts.
Okay, now just the elevator pitch for this, now that you're on the podcast, Need to Know podcast, give us the elevator pitch and why people should care and use the product.
For the Config Man portal, again, it's web-based. You're not tied to your installation of the Configuration Manager console. It's a very easy-to-use interface. The Config Man console, while I love it, and a real Config Man admin who... that's all they do all day long, they're going to still stay in the Config Man console because it has a lot of features that we don't have yet. Ours is designed for the help desk, the desktop support, server support team, the app packagers, managers, the security guys, those guys that need specific tasks they do. Maybe they do them all day long in the console, but very, very specific tasks they do, and they don't need all the complexity that the Configuration Manager console has. So this gives them a nice, easy-to-use interface. For example, app packagers, if you set up a security for that, you click one button for new, I want to create an application, one wizard to fill out, and then what we do is we create what are called templates. So as you create objects in Configuration Manager, you have this standard wizard you have to go through every single time. Well, we let you create templates which answer all those common configuration things you need to do. Here's the distribution point I want. I want the persist content in client cache. I want this to be a required deployment, and I want it to be as soon as possible. I want to turn off notifications. All those things are preset for you in templates. So when I'm creating my software, I'm deploying my software, I load the appropriate template, and bingo, all those answers, all those configurations already set for me. So very, very simple, easy to use, and it reduces that human error factor because I forgot to do that this time.
How do people get started with these products? Is it like a free trial, or how does that work?
Yeah, well, obviously the free products, there's no trial involved. You just download them and use them, test them out in your lab environment. But for the Configuration Manager portal, they can go to our website, cyrusson.com, and from there you can sign up to, you can look at webinars that we've done on it. I did a 10-minute video kind of describing
help getting started.
Yeah, how to get started. We also have KB article on installation process and an admin guide, which is really covers all the different personas and all the different settings in the entire product. But you can get trial keys. So you get trial keys, so you can download the software, implement it in your lab, and then get the keys to unlock it for 30, 60, whatever number of days you get arranged with the Cyrusson representative.
Excellent. And what about yourself personally? How do people get in contact with you?
I would say go to Twitter, but I don't do Twitter. I do have a Twitter handle, but I go out there very seldom. So yeah. The best way is through email, wally.mead@cyrusson.com.
Excellent. Wally, thank you very much for your time.
You're very welcome, Mark. Glad to be here.
You have been listening to the Need to Know podcast from CIA Ops. For training on using technologies like SharePoint Online or Office 365, visit www.ciaopsacademy.com. By purchasing from the selection available, you'll be directly supporting this podcast. To provide feedback on this episode, visit www.ciaops.com/contact. This podcast is voiced and produced by me, Mark Keane.